Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome to the all-new feature show under Omiinka's Oracle Divination Network. Thank you so much for joining me today. And our topic today is on nationality. I would like to also present to some of you the all-new feature season. We're still in season one, but we're talking about a few things that need to be discussed. Nationality, and there are some errors here in the body of the text that will be corrected. We tried to rush and get on here since we haven't been on in so long, and we'll correct those shortly. I'd like to say hello to all my old friends, and I'd like to say Habari Gani to my new friends. And for those of you who don't know me, I am Omiinka 7, and I will be featuring on this show today. Let me borrow some of your airtime. I will be glad to give it back to you. And you can jot down these digits. You can call in on 516-453-9208. And I'm your host for this next 2 hours. Yes, you can call in and you can voice your opinion. On this show, you can talk out your emotion. We're talking about nationality. We're talking about class. And not the kind of class where you step out and say, boy, do I have class. We're talking about class when it comes to understanding where we stand in the establishment, on the map, on the equator. Where do we stand? Are we Southerners, Northerners? What is our nationality? And have we always known our nationality? And have we actually put ourselves in position of our true nationality? Let's talk a little bit about African Americans. We've been from color folk to black folks to American, African American, and some folk even called us copper tone Indians. Now, I want to say for the record, most of us can claim Indians, but not Native Americans. We're not native to anything, but most of us can claim Indian. And a large portion of us used to talk about that we were part Indian or had Indian blood in part of our family. So in looking at our nationalities, what can it gain us? I'd say it can gain us quite a bit. Because of the fact that a large portion of the Indians and most of the Africans or the slaves were living together with Indians, and we definitely could claim some land. As you know, we literally got put off the land that we were cultivating, and it was given to foreigners, and we did not have access to that land. So some of that land still belonged to us. Why? Because we had status. We had position in on that land, which belonged to our mothers and our fathers, our grandparents, and some of us can still claim that land based on status. Now, I've been looking at Dan Calloway's work. I am very impressed with his work. I've been following him for a while. He is on the money. And one thing I do know for sure is that if we're not anything else, we are definitely Coppertone Indians as well as Africans. And I don't see why we can't be both, because there's a lot about our story that connects us back to Africa just as it does to this Turtle Island here on this land. One of the reasons why Dan Calloway urges us to do our congenealogy, and that is the study of our family who lived here in this Turtle Island, not in Africa, because it's very difficult for us to go to Africa and reconnect with any tribe there. Even though hard as we may try, we may not have that opportunity of even connecting with the least bit of our ancestors from there. But since we found ourselves here in the United States of America, here on Turtle Island, North America, we can claim our ancestors here, and we can identify ourselves in landmarks such as in the South. I don't know how many of you came from the South or have ancestors there, but most of us know that somebody in our family came from the South that we can connect to. We can go back and find grave marks, location of our loved ones and ancestors there. And we still have the knapsack bags of the cottons to prove that we were from the South. So we can start there in looking for our nationality. We can start there. Now, is there anyone that would like to come in on the phone lines? Once again, I'm going to give you that number. I don't know why they got all this stuff over here. I don't know if I can move it or not. Won't let me move it, so I can't see who may be calling in. So I'm going to move this. No, change. Changes you made may not be safe. Can't move it for some reason. See if it'll let me move it. It won't let me move it. Okay, hold on. I'm trying to see if I can move this out of the way so I can see who's down here. Okay, there we go. Okay, once again, ladies and gentlemen, I am your host this evening. I have been away for a while. I'd like to say welcome back, welcome back. I am your illustrious host. I am your advocate, the one you need. I am your Maliwa, your mother too, and I am here to talk to you about nationality. Now, please don't be offended because there's a few errors in the body of the text. I wrote that in real fast and did it in the dark, so I will be correcting those errors. I do recognize there are some typos there. I want to say for the record that we have got to determine our nationality real soon so we know where we fit in at. If we don't discover what our nationality is, we could become refugees, and maybe this time we can stand in line and be eligible for something, because the refugees have been coming over for a long time from Ireland, and they've been positioning themselves to get reparation, and they have gotten it. Now, I don't want to just talk to you about reparation, because right now we're sounding on deaf ears. We've got to put a composite together to talk about why we're eligible for reparation and go after it ourselves and not necessarily beg someone and beat down the door. Now, let's take a break here. We want to go down the dusty road and take a break. Hold tight, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back at you. Stay tuned. Thinking about the question to be today is asking, we are asking you to think about, if you could decide on your nationality, what would your decision be? We do need to know our classification. We do need to know where we came from, because it's very vital. We are now in a position where we can determine our class in society. For more reasons than one, we want to know, where do we stand and what does our numbers look like? A number of people came here to this United States and they knew their class. A number of people came to the United States and they were able to decide on what their class was. They literally put themselves on probation until it was time for them to transition. All right. Just wanted to put that information in there. How's everybody doing today? Thank you so much for joining me. I am your illustrious host today. Been gone for a while. Would like to welcome everyone back. A lot has been going on. Ooh, child, a lot has been going on. I am getting so confused over these situations with these cases and these young men. I have been following information online and wanted to remain frozen in my viewpoints until all the evidence was in. And I won't even speak on it tonight because it is such a long, long issue and we got a long, long way to go. We are dealing with some things that should be addressed immediately, and that's our class and our status. So what is your nationality? What would you like to claim your nationality to be? As you know, it's a personal thing. And when you go behind doors to select your nationality, it is clearly up to you what you decide to endorse. I would like to say for the record, it's not a good idea to perpetrate a fraud, pretending you're something that you're not. Now, there's a lot of geeky people that can pass. And they can select the nationality that they want and sometimes get away with it. But then there's the times when other family members will caution them against giving out fraudulent information about what their status is. How does status affect an individual? Well, your status can affect your pay. It can affect your job title. It can affect your status in a community. It's very important to know why you're putting down certain status and why you're putting yourself in certain class. Now, we're going to go to phone lines again and see if there's anyone out there that would like to call in to challenge me on these topics, because I certainly need a foe to go toe-to-toe with. And that phone line number where the guests can call in is 516-453-9208. If you would like to speak with the host, call in and challenge me on this topic, because it is a topic that is so badly needed to be talked about. We are rushing into things when we're asking for the reparation just to be dumped on us. We need to organize and position ourselves in a proper nationality and a proper status so that we can continue not to be outside the letter of the law. Do you know that using the term black and asking for anything all in the name of being black will render you helpless, because you will be outside the letter of the law and they don't have to recognize your request? And that's part of the reason why nobody is responding to our request for reparation, because we are asking for that sum of money all in the name of being black. And that is not a name that is acceptable nor recognized in the court of law. Black is outside the letter of the law. It is invisible. It cannot be heard. It does not have a standing position. So therefore, we've got to stop disillusioning ourselves with the terminology of black. Black is not even a color. And when you go before the court of the law, they do not acknowledge black. So we've got to lose the name black for number one. And we've got to understand that we are the first world indigenous people, and that we are Indians. We can claim Indians. And as we claim the Indians, there were a lot of treaties that were broken against the Indian. But because we were part African, they wanted to segregate us from the Native American Indians. And we're not the Indians that were breeded with Caucasians with the long straight hair. We are the Indians with the dark skin and the broad noses and the woolly hair. But our nationality counts when we make decisions, when we stand on a particular side of the law. Our nationality begins to count, and they begin to take notice of our nationality. Now, some of us carry nationalities where our hair has been changed. The curl pattern of our hair doesn't curl as tightly, some with loose coils, and others with very C-type hair that is very close to the scalp. And when people see the Africans' hair, they view anyone, be it Africans or Indians, that have kinky hair that is very, very close to the skull and that doesn't have very much of a coil, they view that as being ugly because it needs to be relaxed, they say. It needs to be brought out and stretched out and straightened out. We've got to get beyond that type of status. That type of status means nothing. When you go to some countries, they call all the African Americans and all of the Caucasians call themselves by the name of the country and not necessarily the color of their skin. We have gone beyond the color of the skin, and we're not looking at anything that the person has to offer or articulate about them educational-wise. We're looking at the outside exteriors, and we're clumping all of those particular looking people into one bag. And just because they look alike, when they open their mouth, sometimes you can tell that that person is from New England, that is African American, and the other person is from the Deep South. Nevertheless, nobody that I know of that are African Americans want to be claimed as a Southerner. They want to get away from it because of the Southern drawl and because of the lack of education that they claim that African Americans in the South don't get. They claim that they are slow and behind, so they don't want to categorize themselves with Africans. And when you say to them, go and find your native heritage in Africa, they'll tell you, I'm not African, I'm Native American. I'm not African, I'm Indian. So if we are Indian, what entitlements do we have? Let's go to our phone lines and see. We're calling out to callers today to call in at 516-453-9208 to talk about nationalities. What does it mean to you? And if you could determine what your nationality would be, what would you decide on? If you could decide on a color, just as my brother Mayfield would say, what would it be, my brother? We'll find out soon. Let's find out the end of summer. It's coming close. Thank everyone for coming out to join me on this topic, and I'd like to hear from you soon if some of you want to talk about it and state your case. I would like to ask you to come out and pick up your phone lines and call at 516-453-9208. I am your illustrious host this evening, and we're talking about nationality. I'm Omi Inka. You can call in to Omi Inka 7, and we'll be glad to give you the microphone and let you voice your opinion. If you could decide upon what your nationality was, what would you decide on your nationality? What would your color be? What would your status be? How would you define yourself? And we're talking to all those individuals out there, be white, Gentile, or black. We love to have you call in, and we invite and encourage your opinion. Once again, we have been struggling as a people of African American descent, using the terminology black in the courtroom, causing us to be ignored. As we know now, during the Dred Scott decision, if you can remember the actual case law on that, the that particular case in and of itself was used as a trademark. It's a 150-year-old, some odd year old case that has been used as a prima facie case in case law to talk about that Dred Scott did not have any rights in the beginning because he was not a citizen. He was not classified as a citizen, and they could not allow him to even state his case or bring a claim. However, they were talking about divided states, which he actually lived in one state and became free in another, and they wanted to look at the laws in that particular state to see what they said. And it already had told him, that I think it was Virginia it was, that he was not a member of a class situation. He was not a citizen, so he had no rights to bring a case in the first place, and they should not have even been hearing his case, but they heard it anyway, and they denied him. But once they denied him, and I think it was the appeal by his lawyer, they brought it back to hear that case. And when they brought it back to hear that case, in that particular case law or judicial proceeding, the actual children of Dred Scott's owners decided to purchase him. And when they decided to purchase him, they no longer were governed by the law. They saw that even if he lost his case and spent all his money trying this case, that they could actually come in with the monies that their mother wanted. She wanted to sell Dred Scott because she wanted him to pay for his freedom, because I guess she felt all the work he was doing, he could take the money and pay for his freedom. And literally the mother wanted money for Dred Scott. So Dred Scott's children thought it was disgraceful for their parents to do this. And after all, this man had been, Dred Scott had been in their life such a long, long time. He was like family. And it was like these children seeing their family out on the other side of the line, getting ready to be crucified. And they had a heart and they stepped up. It's almost like, is anybody in the house, does anybody in the house have a heart tonight? Stand up, stand up. And they stood up and they proclaimed that Dred Scott was family and they wanted to purchase him, and they purchased Dred Scott. And that's how Dred Scott got his freedom. It wasn't because he tried any case and won. He had no standing in the state of, in that particular state. He had no standing. I think it was Virginia. He had no standings and no ability to have any rights because he wasn't a citizen. Now, just think, here we are in 2021, and we're still discussing the issue as to whether or not we have standing, whether or not we're a citizen. And we're still asking ourselves that question. I wonder if there's anybody on the phone line that can answer that under 516-453-9238. Call in. Let me know if you know your history. You know, we've been taught so many lies in the history class. And I must confess, as a history teacher, I was given curriculums that had lies in them and was told to teach this. And in the back of our books, in the binding of our books, we wrote special notes. We know this isn't true. We know this didn't happen, but here is our review. And a lot of my children knew that I gave separate notes on things that I had my honest opinion about, that I knew was heresy, and that we were perpetuating heresy in these classrooms, passing on information that had not been researched, as well as on passing on lies. Now, once again, I would like to go to the phone lines and have someone call in to talk about that. There's not too many people out here today calling in like they should. We're going to go and do a commercial statement. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you so much for joining me today. This is your illustrious host. I am your illustrious host, Omiyinka, and Omiyinka 7. And I want to say to those of you who have been following me for some time now, thank you so much for being a follower and not just a friend. I am not looking for just a friend, but if you'd like to be a follower, you can sign up. And in this room, we also have a support team, and we would like to invite you to be a part of the support team. And if you are part of the support team, guess what? It's free. There is no fee for being a member. You can be a member of our support team. Yeah. We are doing a lot of stuff here. Let's see where we at. All right. Now, once again, ladies and gentlemen and guys and gals, I'd like to invite you to be a part of our segment of this part of the show. Now, we want to take some time here. We have not been bringing the spirit, and tonight we're going to bring the spirit because it's necessary, and it's a part of our rituals and tradition. And in honor of Maddie Harvey, I'd like to dedicate this show to my sister, Maddie Harvey, who was also a broadcaster on this show. She was our crone of the actual Oracle Divination Network. She brought the house down in prayer. She was one that can get the ear of the king, and she was a moaning woman. And we'd like to pay homage to her today. I did a brief segment for her. However, I'd like to dedicate this show to her, because I do miss her quite a bit, and she was my best friend and my sister and my mother. And I'd like to dedicate this show to Maddie Harvey, Maddie Harvey's children. I'd like for you to take note for being able to talk and to present my sister in this manner. Should be honorable to you as well, because she was my mother just as she was your mother, and she was my big sister, and she taught me everything I know. She taught me how to first write my name, and she taught me about reading, how necessary it was to learn to read. And one of the things I want to acknowledge her about is she encouraged me to be a teacher. She was also a teacher's aide and a counselor. And I like to point out the outstanding qualities of Maddie Harvey that a lot of you native Gary, Indiana people already know. I'm just reinforcing what you already know. But in remembrance of her, to let you know, I have not forgotten about her. And she is one of the ancestors, and she does rank very highly in this room. I like to say we call on the spirit of Maddie Harvey. In honor of you, Maddie Harvey, we present this particular episode, and we honor you and acknowledge you. We know you haven't gone anywhere. Your spirit is still present with us. We know that you are 100 strong here. Thank you for allowing us to climb over your back so that we might be able to see over the mountaintop. Help us with our mountain experience, Maddie Harvey. Open up every door that can be open for this radio station, that you might render it blessed, that you might find opportunities that exist for us so that we might be able to exploit the Word of God and be able to stand on the Word of God. We thank you, Maddie Harvey, that your prayers were very, very prevailing, and the prayers of a righteous man or woman, we know, will availeth much, and they have availed much within this studio. We thank you that you will be the center of our discussion. You will be in every acknowledgement when we ask, do I have permission to pray? Do I have permission to speak? We ask you today, give us the permission to speak, that we might speak in every occasion and speak out on every situation that pertains to the Black family. And we thank you, Maddie Harvey, that you have not been forgotten. And we raise you up here in this room, and we say, glory be to God, and to God be the glory. And we thank God for allowing you to spend time here in this room. Amen. Amen. And we thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for taking time out for that little prayer from Matty Harvey. Matty Harvey was a great, great lover of this particular show. She tuned in all while she was sick, and she spoke out and gave her prayers whenever she felt up to it, and we thank her. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, going back to the phone line, our number is 516-453-9208. And we're talking about nationality. What's it mean to you? And if you could determine what your nationality was, your class, your status, what would you decide you would be? And how would you determine what would be the best thing for you? And we want you to speak out. Don't be ashamed. We want you to speak out. We have no qualms in here about what your opinion is. We definitely want you to speak out, and we want you to tell us what you feel. And we're going to commercial. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're moving along right here. And as everyone knows that African Americans have been asking for reparations for a while now. And if most of you don't know, during the time of the various different codes that were going out into society where Indians were losing their land, the actual slaves were being thrown off their land as they sharecropped, and they lost their homes, and they were made to train the foreigners in sharecropping. And they were going along the side of the road with all their belongings, and all of the reparation went to other foreigners who came to the United States. And it looks like this history is repeating itself, because the foreigners are coming back now and they're still standing in line for their rations. And some of them have gotten rations that belong to African Americans, and that is land. So the real reason why I brought this topic up is I want you to understand that the majority of African Americans, if not 92%, then possibly 98%, are copper-toned Indians, are Native Americans. Why do I say that? I was brought up Native American style because my brother-in-law, my father, was a Native American. He was raised Native American. His mother was full-blooded Native American. And he taught us the ways of the Native Indian, and not of the Native, but of the Indian. So the ways that we learned were the ways that the Indian live his life. And that was based on the universal laws, and that was on the universal healings, as well as on how you gather food and how you store food. So I learned the ways of the Indian. And ask me if I'd rather be a chief instead of an Indian, I'd say a chief. However, most African-American people are part Native American, and they live with the Native Americans during slavery and during the wartime. And down in the North Carolinas and South Carolinas, where they fought so bravely, they had the Geechies there, and they had a number of different Native people there, First World people, who were all together. And as we looked at the Geechies, these were a number of different Indians and Africans together. And we gained our heritage that way. Let me see who's here on our phone lines. Hello? Caller number 408, how are you? Caller number 408, how are you? Who am I speaking to?
This is Way Busy, and I'm doing better than most, worse than a few. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I didn't hear your name. Could you speak a little louder?
Well, Chris. Chris.
Okay, Chris, would you like to say something or add to the topic?
Talking about what's the topic?
Our topic today is nationality, and if you could decide on your nationality, your status, what would it be?
If I got to pick?
Yes, if you had a choice.
Man, that's a good question. I've never been asked that before. I mean, I don't think about that. You know, like, I don't get to pick. You know, I don't get to pick what color my mother's eyes were.
No. If you had a choice, my brother, which would you decide would be right? If you had a choice. If you've heard that song, Curtis Mayfield, If You Had a Choice, My Brother.
Oh, no, you know what I'm saying? Oh, no, I'm happy just the way I am right now. You know, I've been through all the stuff, and I had to grow up and learn about stuff that I didn't know, you know, and I thought I knew a lot of stuff. And then when I found out I didn't know anything, I learned that there was much more to learn. So I just kept myself low, and then I started learning about what love really means, you know, because love goes deep, you understand? And maybe a lot of folk haven't been what I've been through, you know, but that's cool, you know. Everybody's got credentials, you know, abilities to empathize with people outside of themselves, and I ain't no hater, you know what I mean? I just haven't been everywhere. Like, you know, like some of these people have been places I never been, you know, had experience I never had, you know. So I'm cool, though. I'm cool because I can learn something from other people, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I want to project love as just as you do. However, what I'm trying to get others to see is that nationality at one point meant nothing to us as Natives, as first world people. However, as we went on in life, we realized that status did carry some weight, and a lot of things we missed out on. We left money on the table. We left land on the table. And if because we left these things on the table, it put us that farther behind. And therefore, we just aren't coming up, some of us. And then there's those who will never come up. But at the same time, the land and the earth and the world and they belong to the Lord, and no one has a right to confiscate someone else's land for themselves. They must share the land. And that's why I think the problem is the land was not distributed to us appropriately. They gave it to people that were foreigners who didn't work this land. Our mothers and fathers worked this land, so we were deserving of it.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, that's the sad thing, though, because of all the development that's taking place on the land, you understand? And you guys are saying, like, you know, like, I understand there's a lot of this and this and this going on the land itself. So if you're tied up in that system, if you're tied up in the system, the Supreme Court, about, you know, who has rights and this and that, that could be tied up for a long time. So if you, in the 21st century right now, the way you're talking, right, you a forerunner, if you will, in the process of giving back to what belongs to who and when and why, you know. So it may not happen, like, right now, but you're integral part of the bigger picture, right? You're integral part of the bigger picture because you're getting other people on board with what you're talking about, so that there's just more than just you. This is about everybody out here that's concerned about what you're talking about, right? Right?
Yeah, I can hear you. One of the things that I want to clarify is that I'm speaking of our immediate ancestors who were sharecroppers who were here and had land. There were a lot of us that were sharecroppers and owned land, and that land went back to the government. So truly that is the land that I'm speaking of that has ownership in our family, in your family lineages. If you had sharecropper parents, then there's land that truly do belong to you. And under the court of the law, you can pretty much trace it back. And that's what I'm speaking
of. Okay, but, right. And so you look at, so like, Most folk don't even know what you're talking about, you know what I mean? Just the average person doesn't, you know, they might say, yeah, but they may not really know what you really talking about, because what you really talking about is something that's going to empower other people to follow what you're saying because of the fact that you're in charge, or not in charge, you're able to regulate your nervous system. And a lot of folks can't regulate their nervous system. They don't even know.
First of all, I'm talking to intelligent people who can get a drift of this conversation. I'm Native American. I was raised Native American, and I did not find out that there were actual tribes of Native American who have actually identified their land and who have made claims on their land and who are now on their land. If people don't care to research to that extent, then they're losing a legacy that they could pass on to their children.
They don't even know who they are, though. That's what I'm saying. You stepping out here and you trying to bring some light, and you trying to shed some light on an area where people ain't looking, you know. So you want people to be reflecting what you be projecting to them. So and that would let you know that these folks are feeling you, you know, because
let's do it from a perspective. We can't determine what everybody knows, and we can't take the blame for what they don't know. What we're talking about is what do you know? You can speak for yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'd be doing. You know,
you told me you were a love person and you were all about love. Yes,
sure.
I mean, we still could be about love and be about business at the same time, but we don't have to be ignorant all our lives.
No, but you got to be responsible for your actions, and I just want to help people see that. And if you ain't seeing that, then you rely on your feelings too much, and you making way too many mistakes. And if somebody tap you on the shoulder and say, "Hey, man," and you just, "I ain't trying to listen to that," you know, well, oh, really? You ain't trying to listen to that? Now, if I go that direction with you, then I just already messed up everything I'm working for. So I just got to back up off you and say, "Okay, you go ahead and do your thing. I got your back. I got your back, you know, because but love ain't going to mess around,
what?
Right?
You know why I'm bringing this topic up? I don't know if you know Dan Calloway. He's a very prominent speaker on the YouTube. The young brother has been, he has been admonished by many different historians for his research. And he's talked about some things that I never thought about. And when it came to my knowledge, I said, well, I always thought I was one of those persons who had their family's names listed on a ship, who had been in slavery, and then come to find out they told this history to us backwards, and that we never were over in Africa, and that we were literally here in Turtle Island. And I didn't think about those things until he admonished me to go back and to address
it. That's true. That's true. What he told you is right. That's right. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Ain't nothing wrong with that. You understand? Ain't nothing wrong with that. Listen, that's true. That ain't nothing new. That's a new thing. That's an old thing. You know what I'm saying?
No. It's a new thing because you too, and most of us were given history incorrectly in classrooms because I taught history and I was teaching heresy and didn't know it. You and I both were taken in heresy until we found out that we were the copper color Indians. We lived with the Indians, and because we were more African Americans, they did not want to count us as copper tone, so they separated us and called us slaves, and we lost
copper
our accountability
tone.
As a Native American.
Copper tone? What you mean like? What you mean like? What you mean like copper tone?
Well, that was a term they used when they went to count all of the slaves and separate them from the Native Americans or from the Indian. They called those people copper tones. Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah, I hear you. We called those people copper tones, and they were to exemplify true Indians, and we were said to be a partial, a percentage of blood quantum.
But how is that connected like that? How do they know that?
Well, they didn't know. They just made up something and said that, oh, if you didn't have enough Native American blood, then you were considered as having no blood quantum, so you didn't qualify for the rations. You were actually just another slave.
What year was this? What year was this at?
This was when they, the Trail of the Tears, when they sent the people across the Bering Stretch, and they were separating the Indians from the slaves. The slaves were literally living and cohabiting.
They volunteered, though. The slaves volunteered, right? They volunteered. You can't tell me all the slaves.
A lot of them stayed with, you know, the five civilized tribes? Those five civilized tribes were used to organize the slaves. They were used, they even had some slaves themselves, and the five civilized tribes were literally helping the slave masters to get the slaves in order, and they live with these Native Americans.
All right. Now, let me say something with you right there. So the people that were slaves back then, okay, we're all slaves today. You and I, we all slaves today. But I'm talking about back then. So the people that were, that, like you were just saying, staying back, and they held on to the best people, man. They put these best people through school. They gave them an education. These are black people that had an education, and what they also brought from my studies, because I study food, you know, I study like okra and rice, and when I be looking at these foods, you know, and the history of these foods and where things started happening, it was back in these kitchens where these women, like you said, and men were in the kitchens, and they were using the food that they had available to them back then. I see today that this cuisine that they're bringing back today is worth a lot of money on these tables. I've seen some nice restaurants that have this cuisine on the table, and it's not cheap. It ain't cheap. This is real stuff, and I see the up and coming thing. I see the people, the people like what we're talking about back then are able to live through that connection with the food and bring it to a reality for people today. But you guys have to do your homework and understand, like you're saying, where this all happened, why, and all this stuff, because these are questions that most people are going to have if they, if they're interested in looking at what you're saying. You understand?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Well, so, I was just prompting them to understand that eventually when we mark our nationality on that piece of paper, it's going to mean something. So take some consideration to say, I have a choice of marking that, because before with the Dred Scott, he was not a citizen and he had no standing grounds, and we might not have citizenship ourselves, but it might be something we need to be looking at rather than whether we can vote or not. Because that means nothing if you have no status in citizenship.
Yeah.
Because the voting part was also a gimmick too, and it didn't give us right standing. It gave us a person to vote for, but it didn't give us it didn't give us what class could have given us and status could have given us. Because at one point, you know, black was considered as white. There was certain nationalities that in Africa, even if you were black, you were considered white. So it depends on what your status was.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
And speaking of food, you made a good point about food. Just as when you go into Louisiana, it's really big on food. And a lot of time, our women in the kitchen use food to bring about some respect for our class of people, because we were creating these elegant cuisines, and they begin to honor the fact that we could take a little bit of something and make it into a cuisine. And now if you look at foods that come out of Louisiana, everything you make that deals with the gumbo or deals with the Creole is a delicatessen. Because I cook Creole myself, and I know that once you're able to use food together, people together, to show them that you have to have respect in these people if they can test your palates and make you realize that no one else can make these foods, so they have to have some intelligence.
Yeah. Everybody that cooks that way should do a YouTube video and explain it to people. Everybody that cooks that way should do that, so that when whoever goes on YouTube and looks up anything about that, they're going to get a lesson from the people who make the food.
You not only get a lesson. If someone's cooking Creole food, there is a story behind every dish that you make, and how you almost burn something to give it a slight different taste, even though you're not burning the whole meal, but you're just scorching it to give it a scorch flavor. And a lot of Creole food is cooked that way, and people have to develop a taste for that.
You know, it's like anything else. You know, some people don't know. Like, they could taste this, but, you know, There's more than one of that, you know. I mean, that one may be like okay, but if you ever tasted this one would light your whole tree up, you know. You'd be lit up like a Christmas tree, you know, when you eat this one. And we want people to be drawn to the stuff that's really good, you know. Nobody wants to fart around with the knickknack stuff that people are just trying to make money on. If the people that are authentic, the ones who are authentic, they don't have to try to be something, because they already are who they are. You know, just be who you are. Don't try to be like, try to act like something else. You know what I mean? Because all you're going to do is you're going to miss out on life. You know, that's not really who you are. That was an illusion. You lived in the illusion, and you never came out of it. You know, we got to get people out of the illusion into the reality, so we can all get along with each other, because everybody brings something to the table, if you will, the world stage.
Well,
you know
something, brother, you know something, I'm glad you have a heart and can believe that one day this will be a natural procedure that
yeah. We
have all got something to bring to the table. And nobody can say that I'm outshining the other, because unless you were one of the chosen one, and it was pronounced in the scriptures that you were the chosen one, you have no business esteeming yourself. And if you're esteeming yourself, you are to let others esteem you, because right now we have a problem with people respecting one another's and ideas. And that's what we are fighting hard about. You have no right to stand up and be a white supremacist and say my ideas are the only one that counts, because we're all God's children, and he created all of us as a gift, you know.
Look at what you just said, right there. If you want to go to the scriptures and find out what you said, I can show you. It's in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. There was a word in there, it says darkness. If you see that word there, that word, what it means is spiritual darkness. It means that people can't see spiritually speaking, so they're in the dark. Now, they can see out their two eyeballs, and they can go, oh, that's just crazy. It's light outside, and yeah, okay, whatever. But they can't see spiritually. All they can appraise is the words that you speak. Like if you were trying to describe something that wasn't right, and you wanted to use a couple of words that were vulgar to do it, and you did, but they only hear those vulgar words. They only hear those words. They don't hear what you were saying, because they're limited. They have limited abilities. Your abilities exceed their abilities. So since you know so much, why would you come down here and argue and fight and debate with these people about what you know? You would look like an idiot, and you would have to say that you're sorry to the truth, because the truth would be looking at you like, are you done yet? Are you done? And then when you're done, you can say, I'm sorry for what you did, and you can start doing the right thing. Now, if we can get people to do the right thing, then hey, girl, you rock and roll, baby, and I'm with you on this.
Well,
let me
say this. People, everybody has their own conscience, and everybody will be judged at one point in time. There's no need for me to get people to take a look at themselves, because they will have all of their deeds weighed like a feather when it's time for them to go and transition. So I don't have to even press that point. What I'm merely trying to do is to give people an understanding that we have never been told who we were. It's always been a secret about who the African American was. We've been given every name under the sun, but yet we still don't know our lineage. We don't know our nationality. We don't know our class. And that's very important for us to start researching that, creating teams to research, and even invite the Caucasian people in to help us, because they're our campaign too. Because when you look at the mulatto coming out of Creole, all of them are a potpourri of white, Spanish, and French, and black, because that's what our family is. So I'm not excluding the Caucasian. We're including them, and they need to be included into something.
Well, I'm just saying that that you got to be careful see, this is the thing I was trying to help you to see earlier, is that some people, when you're talking, are going to be reflecting what you're projecting, and then there's going to be other people who are not. And the only reason why they're not is because not everybody's going to have the same outlook that you do, the perspective that you do. But since you have this perspective, you want to be like a mirror. And this is what I was trying to help you to see earlier, is that when you're talking to people, you want them to see what you're saying. And then when they see what you're saying from that standpoint, wherever that is, girlfriend, listen, from that standpoint, they'll be able to take a look and see where you're coming from. And if they're going to see where you're coming from, they're going to see you're coming from your heart, okay? And when your lips are moving, your lips are telling on your heart where God, Yahweh, is doing an amazing, wonderful work. And Yahweh is the spirit. He's not like a physical thing where you can look at your two eyeballs and look at Yahweh. No, it's spiritual. And you have to have a spiritual mind. And if he's given you the mind of Christ, then the mind of Christ gives you the clarity that you need to be able to see the people. And sometimes when you're looking at people, they're thinking something. And when they're thinking something, then they're going to start saying something. And when they're saying something, you're listening to what they're saying. And what's happening is that the spirit inside of you is appraising the words that you're listening to let you know if Yahweh's over there working or if it's just man talking about what he thinks that Yahweh is saying to you. Now, if you don't understand what Yahweh's saying, you could believe anything. And you could just say, and you could spend years and years doing all that.
But well, let's get back to the point. As a narrator, I am to drive you back to the point. So let me drive you back to the point
okay,
here.
Okay, okay.
But once again, now, we all know that there's some people on probation to become white, and some people, their dying wishes is to become white because they know that a status with that class. They know that there is up on the up and coming where you're going to be moving up the ladder, the glass ceiling.
Okay.
And it's all diagnosed with advancement. So now, if we define what class really is and break it down, and then all people will say, oh, my God, this particular group was carrying all the class, and they were actually admonishing all these other lower groups to try to become a candidate to become white, so they got in position to get on probation. What do we do when we're on probation? We try to abide by all the regulation, and sometimes we cheat to stay on probation so we don't lose that status, that position
so
where we're moving up. And what
so
has happened... What has happened is so many people that are not just Coppertone people, but other
okay.
people of color, they've fallen into
okay.
that bag too. And when they were
okay.
brought over from other
okay.
countries, they said, listen, we're bringing you over from another country, but we're going to put you on probation to become white. You don't have a class just yet, but if you do good, do like I say, you move up the ladder, you'll quickly become white.
That's
so
bullshit.
Everyone falls into this trick bag, and when they fall into this trick bag, they find out if I carry the status of white, then I have perks, then I have right standing, then I have all these things. Now, if
okay,
we break
okay.
that whole, if we
somebody's
break that whole
the
thing,
cow.
If we break that whole thing down and say no more caste. This is not a caste system. No more class. We're coming into it, bearing our chest, and we all are in right standing. That's how eventually it's
no,
going to be
no.
that when a small percentage of people are populating
no.
and creating this clan, eventually
you
when their numbers are up, they cannot manage this organization. It's already falling apart now because there's not enough people to manage that caste system. And when that system goes out, you know how they talk about the wealth, the riches of the wicked are laid up for the just, and that this system is going out. This system is going out the way we know it. Even cash is going out. So it'll be a different, just like you talk about all that love will be coming into existence like Aquarius. And just think, you'll be able to administer that love that you talked about and do it honestly to teach them why it's so necessary to use love because it's stronger than hate. So we don't want to just appear to be punks walking around saying, I just love everybody. And they're going to say, man, you're a fool.
That's
you
why
know,
I told you, man. I told you.
That. So we want to remain faithful at the same time. So we create this new
no
world
problem.
For everyone, not just for those who have overcome, but for the people who are sick. We create an
the
antidote.
Real, look at the real people,
them.
Man. Look, you know as well as I do that I don't care what color you are. It ain't got nothing to do with your color of your skin, man, the pigment of your skin. I'm talking about everybody. Everybody has been taught conflicting lessons from one parent or both because some people they didn't have both parents. They only had one parent, so they was bankrupt of love. And if you ever had a kid that's been bankrupt of love, the other parent tries to compensate for that lack. And when you're doing that overcompensating bullshit, you fucking your kid over. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to learn. Nobody wants to be the heavy when you raise a kid. Nobody wants to tell a kid no. And stick to their guns, right? Everybody wants to be the loving, lovey-dovey. I've been the heavy one all my life because I was like, I want my kids going that direction the way I went in. I was like, oh, hell fucking no. You ain't going to be doing none of that bullshit. You ain't going to be talking to your sister like, I hate you and shit. Man, you don't hate no motherfucking buddy. You know, you may not like what people are doing, but you don't hate the people.
All right, now
with
watch
you?
Your mouth. Watch your mouth now.
I'm just saying.
I got that. But now here's what I'm saying. I see you getting a lot of emotion out, and that's good because we want these phone calls to be so people can express themselves, but we want to do it in decent order.
One of the things
I think that I just preached about, and you might want to go and listen to it. Initially, I was talking about the traditional African faith and how we held it very close to our hearts and we thought it was created for us and we cried out to our ancestors and they gave us a way of worshiping so that we can overcome our peace. But I didn't realize it came to me and I had an epiphany. And when it came to me, I said, okay, then who do you give medicine to? Those who are in need of a physician. So why would God create religion if it wasn't for the sick, sick soul? And it came to me, we've got to share our so-called traditional African faith with those who are sick. And once they come in line and to compliance, then they will realize, I've been doing this all wrong. It's time for me to make a change. I'm ready to make a change. The next thing you know, it will catch on like wildflowers, and that's how evangelism is. And we're not doing very much evangelism. We're not evangelizing anyone.
That's only because you have the ability to empathize with what people are. Remember Moses? Remember Moses? Moses had a brother. His name was Aaron. And Moses and Aaron both lived in Egypt, okay? They both lived in Egypt, but they had different positions. Moses had a different position than his brother Aaron. Aaron was a slave. Moses wasn't no damn slave in Egypt. And listen. And God used Aaron because Aaron had the abilities to empathize with the people, whereas his brother, he didn't have that. His brother was a different kind of a leader. Aaron was on the bottom where people are at. You know what I'm saying? His brother had to go up the mountain to the top of the mountain. You understand? And Aaron was down the bottom down there dealing with the Israelites. They were going crazy. So Aaron had to tell the Israelites.
10 o'clock,
hey, Jake.
What? 10 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. It's 10 o'clock.
Now, here's one thing you didn't say about Aaron. Remember, now, Moses was slow to tongue. Moses had a problem with speaking. He couldn't think fast enough to meet the people's conversation. And Aaron always was elegant in his speech. So he was chosen to be the mouthpiece to speak for Moses. Did you hear what I said?
Aaron was a spiritual leader like you and I are.
Aaron had the ability to stand up to the people and speak. Moses was very slow to tongue. He wasn't able to speak out fast enough.
All right, let me tell you something. Aaron told all the people, "Give me all your gold," and he's the one that decided to make the calf and stuff. Okay, so they were all partying. They were happy. The people were happy. When Moses came back down, he's like, "What's going on around here?" Now, God didn't get on to Aaron. God got on to Moses, but God didn't get on to Aaron, just like God don't get on to you. Because when you make a mistake, right, if you do, like taking God's word out of context and making it say what these people and these Christian people try to make you think it says, you ain't got to listen to none of that. That's the problem people have. They listen to the wrong thing. And since they listen to the wrong thing, foothold in their thought process, and when they open their mouth, they start talking about the wrong thing. God said it's not what goes into man's
okay,
defiles,
let's get
what
back.
Comes
let's
out
get
of
back. Let me turn you a little bit. We're getting off a topic here. Our topic for this evening is nationality and classification. Now,
if the biblical people
were striving for classification, that's one thing. But remember now, they were pending a war, and John the Baptist came in and told everyone that there's one that's going to come that I am not even worthy to baptize him. John wanted a war. John wanted a war, and he wanted to do it with violence. He wanted to meet the people with the Black Panther fist because that was his emblem over his door.
Do you know any Black Panthers?
Jesus said no because he wanted to speak to the people elegantly because he was taught, did not I draw them with love and kindness? John wasn't talking about no love and kindness. He was talking about beating somebody over the head and making them comply. Now, they were fighting amongst themselves about how they were going to tackle this whole thing. So what we're talking about, a lot of those Jewish people had no status, they had no class. And when you don't give a people status or class, they don't know where they stand. They will always be fighting because they think they're just as good as the next person, and they want to be in that particular category. Now, let's put this topic back into perspective. We're getting all over the place.
Let me say something.
I like to kind of stay on task. Now, as we talk about class, when you go into a place, some people can demand respect for their position in class by virtue of how they carry themselves. They don't ever have to have they can walk into a place, and because that person so subtly walks into a place, he commands their respect, and every time he comes back again and again, he's gathering respect because of his status, his class he presented himself in. A lot of times, African Americans don't know where they place that, so they go to the gutter. They go to the back of the room by virtue that's where they think they're supposed to be, in the back of the bus.
If they ever get
the notion that I am king, I am the God with the little head full of wisdom, I am a God, so I can command the same respect. Black people are waking up. They're realizing that they have a status in class, is a statusly heavenly class. And if we can bring that heaven down here on earth and present that to the world, then the world will be governed by our status, our class.
Let me show you something really important to you. I would hope that it would be important to you because I'm going to tell you right now. And most people that I share this with, it's important to them. Okay, do you personally know any Black Panthers, or have you known any before in the past?
No.
Okay, I have the experience of being in the company of a Black Panther, a leader, back in the 60s, and he was doing time in the penitentiary. I was doing time in the same penitentiary he was at, and we was walking around together, and we was talking to each other. And he shared some things about his life that when I look back at what he was saying, it's like a beacon of light, you know what I mean? Because he was talking and he was speaking and I was able to see what he was saying. And like I told you earlier, when you can see what somebody's saying, you can take a look and see where they're coming from. And I'm walking with this man on the prison yard, and I knew he was coming from his heart. He wasn't, there was no, nothing, he had no reason to put any stuff in there. He wasn't talking like that. Johnny Cochran was going to get him out of prison. His name was Geronimo Pratt. A really humble, this guy is so decorated. And when I had the pleasure of meeting him and spending time with him and interacting with him, He had left me with the impression that what was important to him from what he was sharing with me was what he was taking me back to when he was just a little boy and he was looking up to his father. And then he shared with me everything that he had dreams about. And so this man stepped out and did these things, and he was the person he was, and I think the guy is amazing. He's an amazing person that stands out in my life, and I still talk about him to this day, every day, everywhere I go. If I have an opportunity, I will bring his name up, Geronimo Pratt, a Black Panther, a leader.
I can appreciate that story, but I want to draw you right back to the beginning. If you had a chance to determine your nationality or your class or status, which one would you choose and in what order?
I'd be the one I am now. I am now. I'm Italian.
But what are you now? I don't know.
I'm Italian and Portuguese. Italian, yeah. So I'm cool.
Okay. All right. And you feel that your status has served you well?
It has given me the ability to see that I have power with certain people, that I've been in their shoes. And so when I speak to those people, they're more inclined to keep the door open to their heart to me, because I'm not trying to control them or trying to manipulate them or anything, or exploit them or anything. So I'm more of the one that they would want to talk to than people that don't know their ass from a hole in the ground.
Well, I can appreciate all your points, and your points are well taken. I didn't start looking at classification until I thought about the Dred Scott case, and I realized that they were bringing the Dred Scott case back again, and it was over 150 years old, and they were using it as a prima facie case as comparison. And there's so many interesting cases out there that can remind us of what classification is, and that's one of the main cases that we'll talk about, having having classification and being able to be put in the class. And that's really what our topic was about today, trying to get people to think about, if you had a chance to decide, what would you decide?
But you said something earlier. You said something earlier about the people back in that day when they were, when some of the Black people were like the white people didn't want to let them go necessarily. They were free to go, but they were like coerced, maybe, if you will, maybe tricked into believing that they were still in that slavery position that they were once before.
You're talking about, I was talking about the five civilized tribes and how they were used to govern all the slaves.
But
and
you said they were
slaves.
They were used. They didn't have any knowledge of what was going on. But I think that maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Some of them didn't. Some of them were slow to learn.
I didn't say that, because Black people and Indians are very intelligent. They have a very high IQ. I didn't say that.
Yeah,
maybe I misspoke. I was saying that, as you look at the judicial system, most of your Native Americans helped to formalize that. It didn't just come by virtue of a group of European men who came up with
it. Yeah, but
these were Native Americans who came together to help formalize that. So I respect highly their intelligence, even though they didn't have our schooling or tutelage. They had a very high form of education that was not from books and learning. And I know this because I grew up with a Native American man, and he was not a very learned man in our traditional schools, but he was the most intelligent man I ever met. What I was saying is that the five civilized tribes were helping to keep the slaves under control, and they even owned slaves, and we still catered to them and stayed with them and was a part. I don't know if you know about the war that they had when they had the 54, and they all came together, the Geechees and all the slaves came together, and they fought this war, the French war. They came together. And they won that war, and a lot of them was down in the swamps, and they could tolerate the swamps, and they had no problems with the malaria, the diseases, they were not dying and they could handle it. So some of the white slave masters gave everything over to them and let them govern the slaves there because they couldn't go down the swamps because they were dying from malaria and all of these other insects. And
Native Americans
had to be very clever to come up with a judicial system. They came up with treaties. They wrote treaties. They were very intelligent.
But listen, you said that remember like Africa, right? Like there were ships that were coming to Africa, but then people would go on the land.
No, I didn't say anything about
any
ships.
Huh?
Where'd you get that from? I didn't say anything about any ships. What do you mean?
I didn't say you said anything about no ships. I said that they would come by, but they would go onto the land there in Africa, and they would die there. They wouldn't leave it. So the people that would come to Africa.
I was saying that we were tricked and we were told we came from Africa to here, but they don't know a time when we weren't here. We were always here in Turtle Island, North America. They swapped the story around and made us believe that we were brought from Africa.
But you have to know your history before you go talking, working trades,
and we were functioning here, and we began to teach. And a lot of us, the only reason why they got here was because we were teaching reasoning, because a lot of those people came out of Africa. They had colleges and universities there, Timbuktu. Read about Timbuktu. And they were educating people from around the world, from Europe, were going to Timbuktu to get tutelage and get learning. So you had a lot of your education coming up out of Africa that the European, remember, Europe didn't exist at one time. It was part of Eurasia, and then it split off. So Europe wasn't in existence when parts of Africa was building universities. Did you know that?
How far back are you talking, though? Come on, man. How far back are you going?
No, I'm not talking that far back. If you look up Timbuktu, you will find that.
Yeah.
Remember Aristotle? Remember Hippocrates? Homer?
Yeah.
All these people went over to get tutelage by the Africans. They went into the Africans to get their training. And remember... The gentleman came in and he plundered their libraries. He tore their libraries down. He stole from their library because they had the greatest libraries because they were training people from around the world. And they didn't like the fact that they were telling everyone they got their training from the Africans. They said, no, you didn't. You couldn't have. Here, drink this hemlock. And they made them drink the hemlock. You don't know the story about the hemlock?
Hey, keep going. Go ahead.
They made them drink this hemlock because they said, no, Aristotle, you're wrong. Homer, you're wrong. You couldn't have got this education from an African. And when they discovered that this is where all the learning was coming from, everybody was going to Africa to get learning. Because you must remember... Europeans were in a dark age at a particular time. They were going to Africa looking for a cure because they had a lot of septic
diseases. What year are you talking?
You could trace the history. It's in the history during the dark ages.
I don't know.
I don't know if it was before Christ or BC or AD, but it's in the history, and I'm not going to put myself to a year because I can't remember what the year is, but it's all in the history. It could be in the beginning of when you had Amun-Ra, and Amun-Ra was in, these people were in office for a long, long, long time. Until they began to build the pyramids, and then they were coming down on the downside. Huh?
Okay, but you're trying to talk about something way back. You're like way back in the day stuff.
I'm trying to tell you that you had some very educated people that were the Native Americans and the Africans. Even though they never had our traditional schooling, they were very, very intelligent. They built institutions that are still standing now. And they never went to our traditional schools.
Okay. So when, like I said in the beginning, you're a forerunner in this effort that you're doing. You're like the person I was talking about. He was a civil rights dude, you know. I mean, so was Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, right? Malcolm X was more aggressive in the fact that he was like, I'm not going to turn my cheek anymore. You know, we're not going to turn our cheek, right? Okay. So Malcolm was aggressive, but Dr. King was what Malcolm didn't understand, which is what I'm trying to help you to see, is that when you're teaching somebody, okay, when you're teaching somebody and they smack you on the one cheek, you can turn them and give them the other cheek, because it's not you that's teaching them. It's the truth and love. And God is the only one that can teach the truth and love. And if he's taught you, then he's taught you that you can be patient with these people when they're coming into the understanding. You can be kind to them, gentle. These are the fruits that are produced in love. That's all I was
now,
saying.
Now, let me ask
you
a question. Do you really personally internalize and believe that, or is that something you were taught to say?
No, that's me. That's what I believe this. Your actions will follow what you believe. And what I'm doing right now by calling in and these are my actions, and they follow exactly what I'm saying. I'm not going to try to bullshit you, because you don't need any more bullshit, and I don't need any bullshit. So we can just cut through that and talk about what's right and true so that everybody can benefit from what we're saying.
Okay. Now, since you take on the cliche of Dr. Martin Luther King and not on Malcolm X, you're saying that King was successful in his methodology and he won the people over because he was nonviolent. Do you know he had to go clear to Africa to steal that concept from Akhenaten, who believed in nonviolent? But he did not go there. He went to Gandhi. It wasn't Gandhi's concept, it was Akhenaten's concept. It came out of Africa, nonviolent, not Gandhi. Gandhi took the credit for it. They put up an actual statue of Gandhi in the place of Dr. King when it wasn't even Gandhi's cliche. It was Akhenaten's cliche. Now, you see how they honored that? They didn't honor that in the proper way, because they didn't want to give credit to an African or to an Egyptologist who actually coined the concept nonviolent.
Okay.
And that's how he fought his wars, was through nonviolent. He found out he was wrong. He started losing wars, and he had an afterthought about fighting and not using violence. He had a second thought if he was right or not. And it came out of Akhenaten and not Gandhi. Gandhi stole that from Akhenaten.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is that when we speak of nonviolent, Dr. King, he had the cliche of using love. And usually love is strong enough to gain somebody, because that's how you draw people with love and kindness. So he started out with the proper methodology, but you must remember the younger people from SNCC came in and they wanted to use violence and they wanted to use force. However, Dr. Martin Luther King would not go along with it. But SNCC and all of the other young people from college, these were young people from college. They didn't know what they were doing. They wanted to use violence. And they didn't realize you cannot fight a melanin bullet that's aimed at you.
Dr. King said it.
But did you hear me? They didn't realize that there was an army against them, and they had melanite bullets that could aim directly at them and shoot only them. They were young, inexperienced. They were making wrong decisions, and they made some wrong decisions.
Okay, look, it. You know a lot. You have a lot of insight. And so with your insight that you have, like the way I be talking, the way I be talking to you, like there's nothing wrong with what I'm saying. I know that. I know there ain't nothing wrong with what I'm talking about because I'm just trying to help you to see that, look, it's all about love, you know. Like I said in the very beginning, you know, love is what generates love. If you worry about everything, you worry about this and this and that, which is what you perceive, then you could be magnifying that stuff, and it becomes like a mountain, right? And people get hung up in this stuff, and they can't do this, they can't do that, and they feelings about all that stuff. They'd be relying on their feelings, and they'd be making all these mistakes. But if you try to go over to somebody and tell them, hey, look, look, and they ain't ready to hear it yet, then they get irritated with you, and they get upset with you, and then you get upset with them because they're not reflecting, like we're talking about, what you projected. So if you don't do it in love, then they ain't never going to hear it because you're just making noise. Now, you want to cut through that part where you're making noise because you're cutting through the bullshit to get to what's real, right? To get to what's real. And you want those people to get what you're talking about. I understand what you're saying. I get it. But I just try to say, you can't be having your chest pumped out like you all that. Because you are coming from the bottom. You have no other way to go but up. So since you know things are going
hey,
up.
Let me back you up a little bit. Let me back you up. Slow your roll for a minute. Now, you have to know what position you are in Christ. Has nothing to do with your rep out here on the streets.
No, I know that.
But let me finish now. I listen to you. Now you have to listen to me. You're not a good listener. I'm a very good listener.
Okay. I listen
now,
to you too.
Now, I
want to
say that
my
rep out here on the streets is not worth nothing unless I got a relationship with my higher self, and that's the God that lives inside of me. Once I've established a relationship with my higher self, I can go to my higher self and speak to my higher self, wrestle with my higher self until he or she or it blesses me, because we don't know what it is at this point and what pronoun it is. But we do know that if we spend time with God, people will know it. There's a Shekinah glory that shows up on you. You spend time with God because you will have the mind of Christ and understand how God about certain things.
Ooh,
and my position with God it is a private thing, but people will know that I have a place in God when I come out on the scene, because there's a certain amount of respect that they're going to betroll to me. Now, this so-called rep on the street, all you're doing is perpetrating and name dropping it. And people, sometimes they go along with that because they say, oh, my God, that person, you know, he's bad, he's this, he's that. They don't know Christ. But if they know Christ, they'll know whether or not I've spent some time with him and whether or not he's got my back. Okay? Now, all this stuff that we're doing out in the streets, Martin Luther King had some very valuable time he had spent with Christ. That's why people gave him the respect and the acknowledgement, whether he was right or wrong. They knew he spent some time with God. Okay?
Yeah.
So therefore, when he came out there saying, this is what God wanted to do, even though some of the men say, no, hell no, I won't. They changed their attitude just to be in right standing with Dr. Martin Luther King, because they knew he had a party line connected into God, and they wanted to be in that number when he made that phone call.
Yeah, he sure did, huh? They were like, yeah, because hey, look, it takes a big heart to take the kind of assault that were placed upon the existence of the love inside of Dr. King. And Dr. King was reminded, hey, look, at when they smack you on one cheek, give them the other cheek, because it's not you, it's the spirit working in you, through you, and for you, doctor.
Let me also say this to you so you know where I stand on this. I am not, I did not coin, I mean, I know Dr. Martin Luther King didn't coin the whole concept of nonviolent. I know where it came from. I know where the root of it is and where it was derivative from. So therefore, I don't go along with Dr. Martin Luther King on that. I really don't. And I think that was his error, because
that's
when
okay.
someone think
that's
they
okay.
when someone think they can play you and that you
look
don't
it,
have the strength to rise up, then they will continue inflict pain on you. And just like children, sometimes they say, oh, you're never supposed to spank children. You're never supposed to give them a spank. And
you don't
we
know.
You might not. You may not inflict a physical blow, but you have to inflict pain, because once that pain is inflicted, and if it's taking something away, denying somebody, that pain has to be inflicted. And I say you don't have to meet somebody with a blow, but if you are a recipient of God's partner, you are heir to all of his resources. And God's resources are not carnal. They're not carnal weapons. They're not weaponry. You can use spiritual warfare through your words. And your words can be powerful like a firing dart. You must use those words against If you
do not use those words
against your enemy, guess what? They won't learn to love you. They won't even learn to respect you. And
look,
I don't agree with Dr. Martin Luther King was saying. He should have said, let us go to the dictionary, to the Bible. Let us find the powerfulest words we can find.
Let us sling them across the courtroom and use them cuttingly to cut going in. You make mistakes. And if you don't understand that, then you might as well not be doing this show, man. Because if you don't understand that, then you ain't in a position that's humble. You're just in one of the positions where you know it all.
Let me break this up. The black man has been too humble too long. We have gifts. We have power. We have authority.
We haven't even begun
to show our gifts.
You're tripping again.
No.
What do you mean?
We've been so humble all of our lives. Guess what? We have let foreigners come to this country and get in front of us and push us to the back. And we have not learned that you have to do for self first.
No. It's not that way. And I know from.
You can say that because you're an Italian man and you have not had these things embarked upon you. You have had
You don't know what I had to deal with.
If you say you're an Italian man, I don't think you've dealt with what a black man has dealt with.
Yes, I have, ma'am. I'm sorry to tell you, but you don't know me. I'm trying to help you to know me, but you don't want to get
to know me because... You did say you was an Italian,
no,
right?
No, you talking about... I ain't never come against you. I didn't come against you or anything about you, man.
You said they don't know what I've been through, and I said, you want to accept the slap and the blow because you said you want to accept it.
I ain't accepted none of that. And it ain't even me, you turn the other cheek
and let them slap the other face.
I'm not even talking like that. I'm talking about spiritually speaking, which you have to understand when you're talking to people. Some people don't understand spiritual things like you do. That's all I'm saying. And if you don't know, then maybe you don't know, lady.
Yeah, I don't know.
I understand
that. Nobody's on the same level. I clearly do. But I'm having a problem with you coming across as saying, Dr. Martin Luther King said, let them slap me on one side, then turn the other cheek and let them slap the other. I don't believe in that. I believe if you got me, you might have got me this time, but guess what? I'm going to go back and pray on this because you won't get me the second time.
You sat there and talked about the Spirit of God. You did not. Did you not just talk about Christ, the Spirit of God? Did you not speak about that?
Did I talk about the Spirit of God? In what context?
In any context at all. Did you talk about the Spirit of God, Christ? Did you talk about that at all?
First of all, you must remember Africans are going to ask you, what God are you talking about? Which God? Because I have a God that lives with me too. Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about the one that already did everything already.
You mean the God that created the universe, right?
Yeah.
Okay. See, you must remember that we're taught that we're gods too.
And that we come into our own by spending time with God, and then we become like God, and we do the things that God do.
Okay,
that's
cool. I ain't opposed to all that. I ain't opposed to all that. So don't act like that. I'm over here like I'm getting in the way of all that, because I'm not. But if you try to make me look like I am, that's because you're doing it for your own selfish reason.
No,
I ain't trying to do that.
No. You're saying a lot of words that are not necessary. Let's not use too many unnecessary words against me, because you don't know me. You're just judging me now.
Well, we don't
I'm
know
not judging
why
you.
Trying,
you told me
to
you told me that you was in prison. You met with somebody in prison. I didn't say a word. I didn't judge you. But yet you keep trying to pretend like I'm appearing to be spiritual, and I'm not. I didn't say anything about spirituality. Yes, I'm a spiritualist, but I don't have to tell you that. I have to demonstrate that through my long suffering and patience. And I'm being patient with you. I'm trying to keep you on topic and not on all these different subjects. Do you see what
I'm
saying?
That's okay. That's okay.
Because otherwise, I can't travel with you in all these places, because we're going from the Bible to what Dr.
Know,
Martin Luther King said, and to Akhenaten.
Okay, okay.
We have covered everything.
Right, right. I understand. You got more knowledge than I do, probably.
I know God is a loving God. He's a patient God, and he's a tolerant God. I am a very tolerant person, and I will
you
go
are.
The distance with someone and help them to see their error. Because I know that eventually I'm going to win them with love. Love is greater than hate. And there is no such thing as two different powers on this earth, only one, and that's love.
Right.
Okay, now,
right.
Hate may appear to be something, but it really isn't anything. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Because God wouldn't create a foe against himself, you know.
Right.
Everybody's saying, the devil. I said, no. I don't believe in our flesh inflicts us. And our flesh becomes the devil, and it comes up out of us.
Right.
So the devil will run around there with a pitchfork. If somebody closed the door and somebody in that room gets to acting devilish, ain't no devil winning that room. That devil is in you and I, and it comes out of us periodically.
Good job, girl. Good job. You are so on point. I really appreciate your words. Thank you for talking the way you are, because you're just telling people the truth, and that's what the truth is. The devil is nothing but a man, and man lies. Remember God said to Cain, he said, where's your brother Abel? And Cain said, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, man, he said, and then Cain was all pissed off because God kicked him out of the garden. So Cain wasn't like happy and jumping up and down or anything. He was upset. And it's because he lied to God. He had an attitude, and God knew that attitude was present in him, and that's why he shows us through his word that man is the liar, because Cain said, okay, if anybody finds me, they're going to kill me. And so God said, all right. I'll put a mark on you, Cain. And what did he put his number? 666, man's number, and man is a liar. So God can be the truth. Our constitution that we have doesn't have God mentioned in it, because then it would be God, right? So they left it open so it can be God. And God doesn't discriminate against any background or anything where you come from, because like you said, it's one. It's not two or three. It's one. And so I understand what you're saying, and I want to support you and your efforts and what you're doing, because I believe what you're doing is something that the world needs to hear. I believe that, and I'm not opposed to anybody.
The reason for me bringing this topic up is because I know that periodically the podcasters have, you know, gotten together to create the news, and the African-American news sometimes get a little distorted when it's presented.
Sure.
And we're talking about a lot of stuff that just is not even necessary, but the real things that we need to be talking about, where is your nationality? Who are you? And what is your standing? You know, then we come up with all this thing about voting. So they got us pushing voting, and we realize that we have to get the horse before the cart and say, let's go back. Let's create a status. Let's create nationality. That's important. And let's get that together so that we are not looking out here abandoned. When we're standing out here, everybody's got their nationality, and we're standing out here with our coats off and looking around saying, well, why didn't somebody tell us? Because we're always helper bees. We're helping everybody instead of turning around saying, wait a minute, I don't have my coat on.
You don't want to limit people's identity. When you limit somebody's identity, you put it in a little box, like a religious box. Like some people are Catholic, some people are like Christian, some people are Buddhas, and some people are this and that. You don't want to limit anybody to that.
Do you realize there's a trick to that? Because all of these nationalities all these denominations we can be. Because I found that there's some commonalities in all of it. And at one point, I could be a Buddha because I am one who submits to Buddha. And then I can be Islam because I am one who also submits to Allah. So we become one in our effort to become spiritual to all of the denomination. That way we can cut the argument out and find the truth in all religions.
Right. Well, I understand what you're saying. And I wanted to, like I said, I wanted to just accentuate what you're communicating. And I know we've covered, I took it off and went this way and that way. But you know, you never know who's in the audience. You never know what people are thinking. I'm just one person, and you allowed me to continue to talk and stuff, and I appreciate that because I don't get that kind of consideration. And like you said, you are very patient, and I really appreciate you. I thank you so much for
being cool. You're quite welcome. And what is your name again?
Chris.
Chris, well, I want to thank you for being on our show. And ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Chris and your affectionate Omienka 7. And on that note, we're going to go out of here with the Leslie Strutt. We want to say thank you to Chris, and please do join us again. All right, now we're on our way out of here, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to work it out as we get out of here. We'll see you soon. For this evening, the nationality is what we were talking about, putting it together in stats and class, and Chris brought it on home by bringing the biblical and scriptures in and spirituality. I want to thank Chris for sounding off on that topic for me. I certainly appreciate him and would hope that he'll become a follower. And to all my followers that are following me, we are coming up on our 12th year. We are about to do some real, real serious discussion groups out here. So we want you to stay with us and stay with this Oracle Divination Network. And we'll be back to see you again. We're going to work it out again. In other words, be ready to follow the leader. We'll be right back. back on again on Friday. Please tune in to our next discussion. Looking forward to seeing you. Oh, Dabble.